I'm Owen.
And I'm Chris.
And this is the Dead War Gamer Society. Welcome back, everyone. Today we have a very special guest we've talked about a few times in this podcast, but actually haven't had a chance to have on yet. But we're lucky enough to get him today, Mr. David Moffitt. Dave is someone that if you've been part of any of the definitely non-GW, maybe even the GW wargaming U.S. scene in the past two decades, you've probably run into Dave at some point. He's a huge presence in the community. Chris and I met him playing the game Dark Age. I know Dave is a big fan of that. Dave was running a 1,000-point challenge and traveled the country challenging new players to play that size of a game. For those of you unfamiliar with the game, 1,000 points is on the larger end of Dark Age, bigger than a typical game, which is a lot of fun. He got some official support from CMON to go do that. I've been to Casa del Dave, and he has a massive collection of older games, newer games. If a game has ever been released, Moffitt is the first person on my short list of people to talk to ask their opinion on it, because he probably has, if not played it, owns it and owns 10 billion points of it. So, David, thank you so much for joining us today. It's a pleasure to have you on.
Thank you very much.
So, I don't think we've ever actually talked about this. You've been gaming for quite some time. What actually got you into wargaming as a hobby?
Well, what got me, it's a good question, because I don't hear that asked a lot. People just assume you're going to get into it because you look at it and go, that's what I want to do. And it looks fun, and I saw it on the tables a lot at the game store, but what really got me into it was I was role-playing and collecting miniatures that we would use in role-playing games, and a buddy of mine looked at my collection and was like, you have enough for a Warhammer army. And I was like, well, let's play that then. So that's how it got me into wargaming.
Right on. That's a little different than a lot of the people I know that have gotten in around the same time I did, which was I went to a store playing Magic the Gathering and saw this cool new thing like Necromunda or 40K and made the pivot there. But that's awesome, man. So we're talking about an older game today, a game that was released in 1991, which predates the internet as we know it. I mean, there was something that was internet-like, but it was definitely not, you know, AOL or forums or Reddit or Facebook, et cetera. So I'm guessing you probably didn't hear about Cryomech online. How did you find out about Cryomech?
My local gaming store.
Awesome.
What I was doing, I was just browsing through stuff, and I picked up the Cryomech book, and I was paging through it, and I was, you know, everyone's seen Aliens. And so I'm like, this is Colonial Marines versus Aliens, but souped up Aliens. Yeah. And just enjoying the artwork and looking at the statistics for the creatures in the back. And this guy walks over and he was like, if you buy that, I'll play it with you. I was like, yeah, I'll do that.
That's awesome, man. It is entirely too wholesome for a podcast in 2021. We're gonna have to find a way to make that terrible somehow, but we'll do that later in the show. So this is usually the part of the show where we talk about what we've been doing in terms of hobby stuff. Chris, what have you been up to, man?
So I've been kind of rotating between that gigantic Hearst City commission and painting up some Conquest. I think the Conquest is giving me a break from the super tiny details on some of the Hearst City stuff. because I'm just hammering away at it with some contrast and a Sizic wash brush. So it's been good. What about you, Owen?
I've been also on the Conquest train, got 2,000 points finally assembled, and just have started to lay down some primer and zenithal undercoats for that, hoping to get about 700, 800 points done this month. I also have some Relic Blade I'm putting some finishing touches on, and my buddy Johnny Grogan has been twisting my arm to play two smaller independent games, Alchemy, and he actually wants to try to throw down with some Urban War at Captain Con, so I've been assembling some of my old Syntha, and gonna try to throw that one back at that convention, so that'll be a blast from the past, but that was a game I used to love, over a decade ago. So it'd be nice to get that one going again. Dave, what have you been up to, man?
I've been pretty busy with work, but I've been doing Dust. I recently got into that.
Nice.
And it's pretty fun. It's simple. So it's nothing super complex. You got little missions to do here and there. But I took the SSU because I love the big clunky tanks. Mm-hmm. And then I now own like 17 of the helicopters.
Nice.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Chris and I were Ray actually told us that you had gotten into Dust, and we were asking him when the Moffitt 1,000-point Dust Challenge was going to start happening.
Any day now. And what makes it even funnier is before I went out today to meet a guy and bought a whole bunch of more Dust stuff. The SSU, he has like Iron Guard and more of the Walkers and stuff like that. So I just bought a box of that from him today and brought it in.
Nice. Well, I look forward to seeing that. At some point, you and I should get a game of that. I know Ray Rappaport's been bugging me to start playing you and get people hyped for it. So we'll have to hash that out after the show. But before we get into the topic du jour today, which is Cryomech, I do want to just shout out some upcoming events. At Dragonfall 2021 in October, there is a Dark Age After Dark event. Head over to the Dragonfall website to get more details on that. It's a 750-point tournament. If you're on the Samaria Reborn group, reach out to Ricky Estrada because he's the guy running it. Now, Dave, I know you have some Dark Age events planned. Do you want to give people a taste of what's coming down the pipe based upon what you're doing?
So I'm trying to get more people to run tournaments so I can hand out gelt to people because I bought all the leftover gelt that was made for Dark Age.
Nice.
So I've got like 80 of them in a box. So I'm creating organized play kits. So I've ordered laminated maps. They're coming. I've got the gelt. I've got stickers and pins from leftover things. I'm going to throw a couple of original things in there. Maybe some progeny miniatures, you know. Just for handouts, right?
Nice.
And it's all going to be free. Like, you just want one, you get one, right? And I'm also getting my progeny painted. I don't have time to paint myself right now, so I'm commissioning a guy to do it. So then I can start doing 1,000-point challenges again. Just bring my progeny with me wherever I go. But the Immortals tournament, what I plan on doing is having the Immortals tournament, giving out these cool trophies I made with the skulls on the crosses. And then probably have it here because Discover Games will let me host it there.
That's awesome.
And I've worked with, or I've talked to Matt Gruber about, am I saying that right? About 3D printing the model for somebody, and then we'll just make stats for it and put it in the game like old times.
Right on. That is awesome. Now, for listeners that don't know, what city and state is Discovery Games in?
It's here in Atlanta, well, just south of Atlanta, and it's one of my favorites. It's not a fancy one. It's kind of laid back, but the people that work there have always been super cool and accommodating, and they don't always just push GW games. They'll push all the little games, too, because that's their favorites to play. So, and even though they don't, Dark Age isn't for sale anymore, they still have a little product there still, but they have a big room. They'll make room for you.
That's awesome. Well, do us a favor, please. Please keep us posted as you get more details on the time that the Moffitt Immortals are going to be taking place. Once you have that finalized, and I would say to you and any listeners out there, if you are going to run one of these Dark Age events or any event for a Dead War game, please let us know. We'd be happy to let all our listeners here know more about it. I think the whole point of this podcast is just help amplify people in the community or communities doing things with Dead War games. So if there's something out there that you're doing, you want to get some more eyeballs on it, please just let us know. But having said that, let's talk about Cryomech. So we're titling this episode "Tell Us About Cryomech" because neither Chris or I have played it, which is why we wanted to talk to someone like you who has played quite a bit of it. It's a game that actually, after you and I had talked, I got interested in. I found a copy of the rule book, picked it up, and I loved it. It is way, way ahead of its time, but there's a big difference between reading the rules for something and actually having some real-life experience playing it and some emotional resonance with the product for it. We also thought it was interesting because we've covered a lot of games from the early 2000s, which is when Chris and I think, really started getting mostly active in the game. But obviously, there were a lot of independent games well before that. So this is 10 years prior, and that was when Chris and I were in middle school, so didn't quite have the investment in these games that someone like yourself did. So we wanted to bring you on to just tell us a little bit about this game. I think it's really an interesting game. A lot of people that worked on it went on to do great things. So let's talk about a really interesting historical, but I mean not historical war game, but you know, war game from history today. So I'll give a quick wiki style summary, and then I'm going to start just talking to you, Dave. Cryomech was a tabletop sci-fi war game developed by John Grant, Ricardo Pinto, John Robertson, and Rod Grant, and was published by Fantasy Forge Limited in 1991. The game is notable for its beautiful artwork and asymmetrical gameplay, featuring two factions that play completely differently. The game is also noticeable for being based on John Tuffley's Stargrunt game. The game had one expansion called Hivestone, which was released in 1994, but unfortunately Fantasy Forge went under in 94. They resurfaced shortly thereafter as Grendel Productions. They sold Cryomech to Scotia in 96, and then Scotia eventually became Scotia Grendel. Scotia plus Grendel. There you go. The game is played somewhere using 20 to 60, but it really depends on the scenario, your point level, that sort of thing. 28mm miniatures. It uses D10s, and it's typically played on a 6-foot by 4-foot table. So, Dave, what would you, if you're going to give someone like a 5-minute elevator pitch for Cryomech, what is special about it? What's exciting about it? Why should someone give this game a try?
To give it a try because everyone fantasizes about colonial marines and aliens, and it's that. But it does it in a way that really makes your imagination flow because you've got these cool aliens, and then you've got some cool marines, but there's not just marines. There's like these prisoners that have these electrodes in their brain, so they're basically controlled to go fight, and all this other kind of interesting stuff just kind of thrown out there in a sci-fi universe. But the whole hive mentality of the aliens is what makes them really cool to fight and cool to run. Like, when you run them, you're just playing the swarm, but when you're fighting them, you're really get kind of worried because you're spending all your valuable troops fighting garbage. It's just these swarms of troops keep killing your guys, and then the big guys show up, and then you don't have much left, and you're like, can I go home?
Yeah, no, I think that's a really good get overview of my impression from it. You had a force that tended to want to shoot everything to death, and then you had a force that wanted to, generally speaking, run up and murder you in melee. And how do you balance that? And the game did a really interesting job with that. And to your point about colonial marines versus aliens, the asymmetric nature also really jumped out at me. So for listeners that have never encountered the rules for this game, each army does a different thing at each phase of the game. You know, the Marines will hand out orders, the Cryomechs will hand out control points. The Marines were originally sold on circular bases. The Cryomechs were sold on hexagonal bases so that you could form them up into groups more easily. It's really different than just, this is a force that's good at melee, this is a force that's good at ranged, and we're going to use the same rules. Like, it's almost something like a board game like Root, where each faction does different things at different times in the game.
Yeah, and the hex bases were really cool because it really drove home the hive feel for it. You know, because you're looking at like a beehive almost, like the way they're connected. Like, yeah, this makes sense.
That I hadn't thought of that, but that is actually that is really cool. So, as someone that never played the game when it was released, just looking back at it historically, one of the first things I was struck by was the high quality of the art. I mean, some of the acrylic, you know, sheets you could put on a photocopier and copy for your templates. Some of the art within the book, particularly within the Hivestone expansion, that's, I consider, even strong by today's standards. What was the reaction when this was released?
That was one of my selling points too. I was looking at the art in the book is one of the things I was looking at. And there's like one that always stuck out because it's alien-esque where a guy's kind of caught up in some membranes and stuff. And there's like one of the Cryomech creatures with a big grin, like, yeah, right there next to him. And you're just like, oh, this is going to suck. I want to play this.
So what are some of your favorite Cryomech memories from when the game was originally live?
one of the first things we kind of noticed, because we'd all played Warhammer of some sort or another, but the one thing we noticed was there wasn't really a point system. Mm-hmm. You just kind of brought what you wanted to. So we would make up these scenarios. And we always made the scenario, not always, but we usually made the scenarios really desperate. Like it was two squads of the Nexus, and then there was like eight squads of the Cryomech. And your goal wasn't to survive. It was to survive long enough to call in an airstrike. Or, you know, so there would be a third person that would be there that would roll a six-sider and add two to it. And that's how many rounds you had to live as the Marines near the Nexus. And then if you live that long, you win, right? But you are so sorely outnumbered, you really have to fight and maneuver and get away, and because you're basically calling an artillery strike on your location. So you've got to stay close enough to the enemy to kill them, but you've got to stay alive, so you got to maneuver. And it was way more fun than having a standard point cost where you're both stuck on different sides of the table.
I like it. I like it. And yeah, I noticed that there weren't points in the rule book when I checked it out. I did notice in the Hivestone release, though, they did eventually put points out. But I thought it was interesting, and I'd never seen a game before, but I think it's actually a really clever solution the way they did this. They gave points, but they also told you to modify the number of points the Cryomech player got based upon how much terrain there was on the board. So if you were playing on a completely flat board, they got three times as many points as they would if they were playing in an urban board. I thought that was really interesting. Did you guys ever play with the points values from Hivestone?
Yeah, we used to play. We played about, you know, once a month and twice a month for quite a while at first, and it kind of broke off a little bit because we're playing other games. And when Hivestone came out, we got back into it again and started doing with the point costs. And it was about kind of what we were doing anyway, because we would, once you play a bunch of unbalanced scenarios on purpose, you kind of figure out what kind of goes with what. You know, like, oh, these 10 Marines are with these three Cryomech units, you know, and then you're like, oh, I need 40 of these guys to face the Swarm Master and these guys, you know. So you kind of figure it out, and you can balance it in your head anyway. But those weren't the funnest games. But one of our fun games that we really like to do a lot we called it nighttime fighting or smoke fighting, where you can't see anything until you're 6 inches. You can't tell what it is until you're 6 inches away.
Oh my!
So we would take dice, and like certain sized dice would represent certain units, and then you would flip it to the number, and they would correspond to the unit on a sheet that was hidden from your opponent. So you'd move the dice forward, so you'd have 4-siders and 8-siders and the 20-siders. And you can kind of tell that the 20-siders are like the Swarm Masters or the, you know, the main hive guys, and the little dice are your little grunts. But you can't really tell until you're there. Mm-hmm. So, you know, which one it is, which grunt it is, or which... Is it a Swarm Master, or is it, you know, something better, or is it something worse? And it's just big. And sometimes the 20-siders would represent the biotank.
Okay.
You know, and that's a surprise. You're like, oh no, I wanted to fight the Swarm Master because I got this gun. Now there's a tank. So the night fighting ones were some of my favorite, because it was just, and especially when I got to play the Nexus, because when I'm playing the Nexus, you're really surprised. If you're playing the Cryomech, it's just more tasty food. You know? So it doesn't matter if it's the leader or the grunt. They're about the same. They're both delicious, right? So it was really a fun way to play it.
That's awesome. It was like the build your own scenario thing, like community ownership, a little bit more common before you know, Games Workshop, Privateer Press started making this a little bit more regimented.
Yeah, the lack of modules or scenarios that were put out made you really flex your head. So you had to come up with your own. And it was with the Cryomech stuff, you've already seen Aliens. So you're like, oh, I already got 1,000 ideas from that. I'm going to play them out in real time now.
That's awesome, man. So this game came out in 91. I know the first Warhammer edition I ever saw in a store, which was second edition, came out in 93. Was there any comparing or contrasting of this to something like Rogue Trader when it released?
So Rogue Trader was a different animal. It was GW had a long-term strategy for kind of taking control of the market. Yep. And so they had a good PR thing going on. They created a feel around their game, you know, because when you go to tournaments, you see people going, guiding the orc players, you just have them go, run, you know, screaming and stuff like that. So they were really good at it. This was more of a relying on people to pick it up and play with their friends. It didn't have a lot of people, supporting it at a local convention or stuff like that, whereas GW was really active in that. So there was a really different dynamic. And the Rogue Trader stuff was fun and cool. You know, I played some of that because you could buy all the different grenades, and that was great. But I really just liked Crimec better because both had some clunky mechanics.
Mm-hmm.
But I just liked the originality of the models in a way. Because, they're kind of copy off the insectoid aliens, but they had those spore guns and those acid propellers, and you're just like, this stuff is awesome.
That was definitely my impression, and it's funny you mentioned that, particularly in the same breath as Games Workshop, because when I saw this in 2020, my initial reaction is, wow, this seems a lot like 3rd edition Tyranids from GW. And then, you know, went online, checked Lexicanum, and sure enough, this came out in 91. 3rd edition Tyranids came out in 2001. Was that something that you had noticed as well?
Yeah. So I use my Crimec stuff as my Tyranids now when I do play a rare game of 40K.
Mm-hmm.
They're pretty interchangeable. You look at the weapons and go, oh, he's got that. It's just that guy, you know? I just mix and match and they're the same thing. So you have Hive Tyrants and all that stuff. So it's not necessarily plagiarism, but it is, you can tell they kind of got their feel for some of their stuff or inspiration from some of the Crimec things.
Yeah, I think that's a fair way to put it. I don't know that it's a ripoff, but it is certainly an homage to Cryomec, which, hey, it's a great game. I'm glad that GW is giving them the nod that way. The other game I had a question about that came out in the same time, and it is actually, my understanding is fairly similar to this game, is Stargrunt. Was that a game you played in that time frame?
I've played that about 3 times.
Okay.
And that was quite a ways back. And it was pretty fun when I played it, but we were already into so many games at that point, it was hard to get a game in. You know?
So, mechanically, my understanding was, at least, I'm more familiar with Stargrunt 2, not Stargrunt 1, but Stargrunt 2 is a little bit more general. It's not the, you know, Army 1 versus Army 2 sort of thing, but the resolution table looks similar. Was that the main borrowing that Cryomic did from Stargrunt, or did something else catch your eye?
I don't remember exactly the similar things, but I do remember us discussing at the time, that was a long time ago. Yeah. We do remember discussing at the time how some things were similar, and it was easy to play Stargrunt because we had already been playing this.
Okay. Right on.
You know, because you didn't have to relearn everything, because you're like, oh, this is very similar. But I can't remember exactly what mechanics were at this point.
Yeah, I would say, and it's been a while since I've looked at the rules, but Stargrunt 2 didn't strike me quite as similar to Cryomec as I might have thought, given the nod in the original rulebook. But maybe that was based upon some updates that Ground Zero Games has made since the Stargrunt 1 days. So in terms of playing Cryomec, is that something that you'd recommend people go out and do now?
So, yes. If you have the rule book, you don't have to, and you don't have a lot of the miniatures or any of the miniatures, you can proxy. Mm-hmm. That's super simple, especially now with GW having some stuff that can match to it. I recommend playing any old war game at least once or twice, because then you can get a feel from where your hobby comes from.
Mm-hmm.
The games you play now are evolved from games that came out years ago. And it's really kind of cool to play games in different eras and see how the mechanics get refined as it goes on.
So you're someone that's been playing games for a while, and in my mind, and maybe Chris has a different opinion on this, kind of the primal source of wargaming was Warhammer. You were around back in those days, though. Were there other games kind of swimming in the same market? Like, when you think of, like, the first war games, where does your mind go to?
It goes to Warhammer.
Okay.
Yeah, and I had a lot of fun playing Warhammer. I just, once I started playing more unit-by-unit activation games, that's mm-hmm. what I came to love.
Mm.
So, because, like, especially when I started playing 40K, I had so much fun playing 40K. We had a 4x8 table in the basement. We'd do Orcs versus Eldar and all kinds of stuff, right? Huge games and just these cityscapes made of cardboard boxes and Sharpies. And nice. So you would have these cool battles, but after playing several unit-by-unit activation games, it came down to this. I was like, I couldn't suspend this disbelief. So everyone on this side gets to move and shoot before anyone on this side can even accidentally pull the trigger. I just can't get over that. And yeah. If people can play it that way, that's great. I'm not dissing you in any way. Play that game, because I had a lot of fun playing it. You're going to have a lot of fun playing it. But the unit-by-unit activation is really just fills that tactical need that I have.
Right on. That's awesome. So you mentioned there were a couple other games like that. Were there any other games that stick out to you from that time period, the same time period as Cryomech, that you'd want to give a nod to?
I played Battletech back then.
Mm-hmm.
That was really cool, but I would break that game. I would look for the max, the super cool combos, and then play with my friends, and they wouldn't want to play with me for a long time. I'd have to convince them to play again. I won't play those guys again. Then I'd have to play something that wasn't as broken, you know? And so I eventually just started playing tanks and troops against them. And because I'd lose a lot, but it was still fun, right? Mm-hmm. And I'm not saying my friends were, you know, spoiled or, you know, were unnecessarily mad, but I was really good at breaking Battletech. Because there are some combos in that game that you can just really kind of almost cheat. You know, you're like, oh, I'm running this Raven with a laser spotter that you can't hit because it's so fast, and these longbows are just going to shoot over the hill and murder you. You know, you can't see my real troops, so, okay. I get it. I was kind of being mean.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
Oh, mercy. So just a couple notes before we close out this. For people that now are interested in the game and want to check it out, I should point out that the miniatures are actually still available. They're still in production from Scotia Grendel. There is not shipping to America from Scotia Grendel at this time. That may change as Brexit, COVID, etc. all change, but Noble Knight has a good stock of a lot of what you would need. I should also note that the rule books are all available for free from Scotia Grendel, so if you want to check out some beautiful artwork in the Core Cryomech book or in the Hivestone book, head over to their website. It's a free PDF download. And last but not least, if John Grant sounds familiar, he also worked on the games Void 1.1, which was the predecessor to Urban War, if you're more familiar with that, and Warzone 2nd Edition. So if you like those games, I'd say this is a game that spiritually shares some of the DNA from those types of games. If you like independent sci-fi games, definitely give this one a look. This is one of the shortlist I have of games to run at a convention where I just bring everything and just, you know, let people give it a try to experience some of the old flavor. So if that sounds interesting, definitely let us know on our Discord, and we'll lean towards doing something like that at one of the upcoming conventions. But having said all that, Chris, you want to ask Dave the usual bevy of questions?
So, Dave, what's your favorite of all these Dead War games?
it's a tie. It's Dark Age and a game called Shock Force. We all love Dark Age. The only thing I didn't like about Dark Age, the one small thing, was I couldn't write units into it because it didn't have a generic engine to do so. The reason I love Shock Force is it has that. It has a generic war engine, so you can write up stats for your guy, your weapons, and all that, and all the same point cost, so it's automatically balanced. So I loved that because I could do demos with Green Army men and insects or my 40K miniatures or whatever.
Nice.
And I even made a rules for Lego pirate ships. So you can do all kinds of cool stuff with the war engine. And Shock Force is a great game. And Aaron Overton is the guy who made that. And he also did Gwar, Rumble in Antarctica. So you could play with the Gwar miniature. And that was a blast.
That's awesome. The only thing I will add is that when you said there's only one thing I didn't like about Dark Age, I was expecting your answer to be Michael Shadal. But you surprised me. It was something different. So that's awesome.
I love Michael Shadal. So let me tell this quick story. One day we were driving to Nova Open. It's a game convention in Northern Virginia. So we were on our way there, and we had this conversation and about some things. And I was like, I can't tell if you like me or not, but it doesn't matter because I like you, and your opinion of me has no relevance on my opinion of you. And he looks at me, he's like, you can't tell if I like you or not. And I was like, no. I mean, you're mean to me no matter what. It's like having parents all over again. And at that moment, I think we came to an understanding that we both kind of liked each other, despite the fact we were both kind of dicks, right?
Yeah, that sounds about right.
So, is there any dead board game out there that you wish more people knew about?
Probably Shock Force. It's really a tight, fun, unit-by-unit game. Had its own set of miniatures for a while. It had a fun, kind of campy backstory. But the gameplay was fun. And being able to write something into it and have it automatically be balanced on the point system, because anyone else can write it up their stuff the exact same way. But then it had tweaks where you could add things that gave certain factions different flavors. And it's really worth checking into, because if you have a bunch of models that you want to play with but you don't have a system for, Shock Force, the war engine in Shock Force, to write those up and play a game with them. And it might not be something you play all the time, but like I've had miniatures that don't fit in any system that I've just collected over the years, and I can write them up into a cool force. I've got some guys that I painted up like desert troopers, and I've got these six-wheeled vehicles, and I could play them in 40K, but I want to do unit-by-unit activation, so I wrote them up in the war engine. So it's more fun that way to me.
That's awesome. No, I think, the folks listening to this are probably into dead war games, which means they probably, much like Chris and I, have a closet of shame of stuff that we thought was really cool at the time, but doesn't have a system. We haven't painted up yet. So I think having a game that can accept lots of different miniatures, I think minis agnostic is the term that people use a lot. An engine like that you know is going to be balanced. I think one of the big questions people have when they start one of those games is like, well, am I going to have a fun time just by accident? I don't think anyone jumps into those to be quote unquote competitive, but it's kind of a bummer if a game's a complete stomp just out of coincidence of the rules. So I think having some inbuilt balance is a very desirable thing. So maybe we can talk to you a little bit more about Shock Force on an upcoming episode. Hint, hint, hint.
Yes. Also, you can get the PDF of Shock Force in drive-through RPG.
Mm-hmm.
And I've talked to Aaron, and he would be open to being interviewed as well.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
Always a positive. So, lastly, is there anyone or anything that you'd like to give a shout out to?
Yes. Everyone who has lost money making a war game I love.
Fair.
That's a lot of people, Dave. I don't know if we can accommodate all that.
That's why it was generic. They know who they are.
That's awesome, man. Well, thank you, Dave, for doing this, really. And hopefully we can have you back on again soon. You are just a wealth of information about games that, you know, even Chris and I haven't heard of. And Chris and I like to fancy ourselves as people that know a lot about different dead games. So thank you again. And hopefully this is not the last time we see you. Before we sign off, I should just mention that we do have a Discord. I'll include a link in the show notes. If you're listening to this and want to talk about dead games with us and people like David, hop on over and we'll have a good time talking about dead games. But until next time, I'm Owen.
I'm Chris.
David's here somewhere.
Sorry. I got distracted by my cat, and my cat started attacking me, and I was like, oh, wait, that's my cue, and I missed it. I'll do it again.
I'm Owen.
And
I'm Chris.
And I'm David Moffitt.
This has been the Dead Board Gamer Society. Thank you. 45, which is Owen's old band. Outro music is Control My Fate by Ataraxia, which is Chris's old band. All songs used with permission. If you like what you hear, please like or subscribe. Thanks.